This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
40 million times a child, a woman or a man was displaced in 2020. That's more than one person per second. And it's continuing.
That's Jan Egeland, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, on the number of people displaced in their own countries. Details coming up. And Nigerian authorities arrest 400 suspects they say are sponsors and collaborators of militant groups. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. After decades of work to build democracy in Africa, the era of COVID-19 has seen the return of political instability and violence across the continent. In recent times, there have been military takeovers following popular protests, constitutional amendments to extend presidential terms, the resumption of regional conflicts, and the rise of terror groups. One former member of the African Union Commission is convinced that the continent is at a crossroad, and developments in the near future will decide whether peace and progress dominate in Africa or the opposite. Darren Taylor reports.
Lesotho's Kabele Matlosa is former director of the AU's Department of Political Affairs. He says state legitimacy is declining in Africa, mostly because of poor governance. Matlosa points out that the wars between African countries that characterized the Cold War period are threatening to make a comeback. As examples, he cites the resumption of conflict between Morocco and Western Sahara, which has also ignited hostilities between Morocco and Algeria.
We are aware also of the tension that is mounting between Egypt and Sudan, on the one hand, and Ethiopia on the other, a link to the great Ethiopian rises. Then we shouldn't forget the border disputes between Malawi and Tanzania.
Matlosa says Africa cannot claim democratic gains while electoral violence still takes many lives and displaces millions of people.
The crisis that Zimbabwe is facing today as we speak is by and large a result of spasms of electoral violence.
The veteran international election observer and political advisor says it's obvious that after a period of optimism, Africans are once again losing faith in elections, as shown by low voter turnout and loss of trust in political parties and election management bodies. Then, adds Matlosa, many ruling parties continue to mismanage Africa's rich diversity in terms of ethnicity, religion, race, gender, class, and other factors.
This, under normal circumstances, should not be a problem. It should actually be a wealth. But oftentimes, these diversity fault lines are instrumentalized. You have a situation of political elite using these fault lines for partisan political ends. Ethnicity is politicized, and politics is ethnicized.
Matlosa also questions why, after so many years, most African economies remain essentially what he calls colonial constructs. Overwhelmingly, he says, Africa's wealth doesn't belong to its people, but to elites. As a result, says Matlosa, democracy on the continent is still marked by poverty, hunger, inequality, unemployment, illiteracy, and poor health services.
This is the irony, because the continent itself, as we know, is the richest on earth, but yet home to the poorest of the poor. This condition does not only generate disenchantment, fitting into protests, but also it's the breeding ground for mobilization by terrorist groups.
He says examples abound: Congo, Mozambique, Nigeria, Tanzania, and across North Africa. Matlosa believes the COVID-19 pandemic has poisoned relationships between citizens and governments by spotlighting poor service delivery. In many instances, he says, governments have used the pandemic to crack down on opponents, abuse executive power, and weaken legislatures and judiciaries.
We've seen human rights abuses, sexual and gender-based violence intensify, shrinking space for civil society and the media. All this have had a negative impact on governance. And the pandemic has worsened socioeconomic deprivation of ordinary citizens. And it has also accentuated corruption. In Kenya, they talk of COVID billionaires. In South Africa, they talk of COVID-preneurs.
By and large, says Matloza, COVID-19 has exposed the failure of governments to develop their countries and people. He's convinced that should this continue, as well as all the political instability and conflicts, Africa won't come close to realizing the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, designed to improve governance and lives by 2030. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Internal Displacement Monitoring Center reports that the number of people displaced inside their own countries because of conflict, violence, and weather-related disasters reached an all-time high of 55 million by the end of 2020. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Experts tracking these events thought sanity would prevail during the COVID-19 pandemic, resulting in fewer conflicts and triggering fewer forced displacements. They also hoped global efforts against climate change to prevent disasters would protect more people. However, the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, says the verdict is in and it is not good. He says last year, conflict and disasters caused more than 40 million new displacements, with some people being forced to move many times out of their homes.
40 million times a child, a woman or a man was displaced in 2020. That's more than one person per second. And it's continuing, so a lot of people have been displaced also in 2021 while we speak.
The report says Syria has the highest number of internally displaced people, followed by the Democratic Republic of Congo and Colombia. It says sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East, and North Africa generated 90% of all new conflict-related displacements. The director of the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center, Alexandra Bilek, says escalating violence in Ethiopia and strengthening of extremist groups in Mozambique and Burkina Faso fueled some of the world's fastest growing displacement crises.
In Ethiopia, we're looking at over 500,000 new displacements that were triggered by violence in the Tigray region, alongside, as you know, reports of human rights violations and abuses. But in across the rest of the continent, we saw how armed groups exploited simmering disputes and expanded their influence across the Sahel, as well as in Nigeria, Somalia, and Mozambique.
Weather-related events, primarily storms and floods, were responsible for 98% of all new disaster displacements recorded last year. The report says nearly 70% took place in South Asia and East Asia and the Pacific. Elsewhere, it says the Atlantic hurricane season was the most active on record, with 30 main storms. It notes hurricanes Laura, Eta, and Iota alone triggered 2.7 million new displacements across 14 Central American and Caribbean countries. It adds 1.7 million displacements were recorded in the United States from devastating wildfires and hurricanes. Authors of the report cite this as an important reminder that high-income countries are just as exposed to disasters as low- and middle-income countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington, and here is a recap of our top stories. The era of COVID-19 has seen the return of political instability and violence across Africa. Escalating violence in several African countries has triggered the world's fast displacement crisis. Thanks for listening to VOA. For more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. China says it is providing COVID-19 vaccines to nearly 40 African countries in what it describes as a purely altruistic action. Foreign Ministry official Wu Peng compared China's outreach with the actions of some countries waiting to finish vaccinating their own people in an apparent dig at the United States. The U.S. so far has committed to sharing 80 million of its doses with the world. Authorities in Nigeria have arrested over 400 suspects they say are sponsors and collaborators of militant groups responsible for worsening security countrywide. Officials say the arrests, part of the government's renewed crackdown on insurgency, are designed to disrupt the financial and logistics network of armed groups responsible for killings of security personnel and abductions for ransom. Critics say the government is trying to cover up its failure to address growing security threats by arresting innocent citizens. For more, International Edition's Chinedu Ofor spoke with security analyst Abubakar Mohammed.
I've gone through the list because it's there in the open domain. I've honestly not seen, you know, any name that rings a bell. They're all businessmen, and some of them are owners of Bureau de Change. They have to move money. I believe there are still others. These 400 are not people that are the main financiers, the main coordinators of the movement. The government should do more. And just like it was said during the regime of former President Jonathan, some of them are even in government.
Critics of the government are saying if the government is really serious, it should arrest and prosecute the main sponsors and big men and influential politicians, not just Bureau de Change operators who might just be doing legitimate business.
I agree with that. To make an arrest and make an example of one big shot, someone that could be used as a public example for all, it will serve as a good deterrence. But these very people, these 400 people, if their arrest is really, really something very tangible, how come the attacks have not stopped? If these people that were arrested and are about to be prosecuted, if they are the real players, the real coordinators, how comes, even though they have been arrested, they are about to be prosecuted, the offensive attack from both ISWAP and JAS has not declined. It has not stopped. There are still others that need to be apprehended.
The main opposition People's Democratic Party are accusing the government of just trying to deflect criticism, that these people are actually not terrorists, but the government just wants to posture to not just the international community, but to Nigerians that it's actually doing something.
No, I disagree with that because personally I've visited 7 people of the Nigerian army in Maiduguri, and I've seen some of these very people. I've interacted with their relatives. These are people that help in moving finance for this terrorist. But just like I've said earlier on, more arrests needs to be done. You understand? These are more or less errand boys of the real people. And some of them would never disclose, you know, the identity of the main shakers and movers of the thing. And for PDP, I think they should stop playing politics with this whole thing. It's more than politics. They shouldn't be using it to score cheap political points. In any case, this thing started under their watch.
With these arrests, has anything changed for the ordinary people in these communities and in these locations?
Honestly, nothing will change. The only thing that can make things to change for the people in the community is if the Buhari government can hold the state governors responsible so that we could see some semblance of governance in the local government. At the moment, there are still so many ungoverned spaces. There is no any visible presence of government in the local government. You go to places, you don't see any semblance of authority there. So those spaces that are so many, the criminal element need to step in and take over and exercise their authority.
People are voluntarily joining these terrorist outfits and paying allegiance and even taxes to some of these groups. Is this true?
Some of the people, the locals, some of them are not honest, they are not sincere, and they are seeing it as if this is an Islamic thing or ethnic people are involved in it. It all boils down to the lack of patriotism, that's number one, because so many people still don't even have the strong faith in Nigeria as a country.
That's security analyst Abubakar Mohammed speaking with VOA's Chinedu Ofor from Maiduguri. Unity Day activists in Cameroon were marred this week by clashes between separatists and government troops. The violence left at least 16 people dead and 60 houses burned. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Local media reported that streets in Cameroon's English-speaking towns and villages were deserted Thursday as the Central African state celebrated its National Day, also known as Unity Day. Meanwhile, business activity went on as usual in French-speaking towns and villages. Efang, also known as Big Number, calls himself the supreme general and commander of separatist fighters in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions. He said on social media that he asked fighters to make sure all English speakers remain at home as a sign of protest against National Day.
Since we don't deny the Republic of Cameroon, we will deny the 20 May celebration.
He says the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions no longer consider themselves part of the French-speaking majority states of Cameroon. He says English-speaking Cameroonians should not celebrate a national day imposed by the Yaoundé government, which is using military might to deprive English speakers of their freedom. Efang also said fighters and government troops clashed this week in the northwestern town of Kumbu and villages, including Bu, Takija, Miluf, Oku, and Dop. Genesis Tamu is a farmer in the village of Bu. He says villagers found 6 corpses after the military left Bu on Tuesday night. He spoke to VOA via WhatsApp.
Navo Bu village, so the Republic soldier, they're not enter for Bu village.
Tamu says he saw Cameroon troops setting fire to houses in the northwestern village of Bu. He says when the troops left, villagers found out that 35 of their houses were torched and property, including mattresses, pigs, and goats, were looted. Tamu said on Thursday morning, village elders were still searching for missing villagers who may have either been killed or arrested by the military or may have escaped to the bush for safety. Catholic Church officials said about 60 houses were torched in Bu, Tadu, and Oku, but did not say whether separatists or army troops were responsible. The military said violence ahead of National Day resulted in the deaths of 16 people. General Valenka, commander of government troops fighting rebels in the northwest region, says the military remained professional during their raids on separatist camps.
Cleared many camps.
Our men in the field observing the humanitarian law. Our men secure the vulnerable, the children and women.
We need a collaboration to succeed this operation. We have to win hearts and minds.
Nkar said many suspected separatists were arrested and are helping in investigations. Philemon Yang is Cameroon's immediate past prime minister and remains a close ally of President Paul Biya. He says fighters should drop their guns and rejoice that the government has done much to attend to the needs of disgruntled English speakers.
C'est avec l'effort constant de chercher à ouvrir le débat.
He says the government is in a permanent dialogue to make all Cameroonians feel comfortable and proud of their nation. He says the government of Cameroon, after a 2019 national dialogue, granted a special status with more autonomy to Cameroon's troubled English-speaking regions. He says every Cameroonian should know that there is no state in the world without problem. He says Cameroonians should stop all attempts to destabilize their country. Separatists have rejected the special status and promised to make the English-speaking regions ungovernable until they are granted their independence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Zimbabwe's government is struggling to lure companies to join the Victoria Falls Stock Exchange amid investor wariness over the country's economic woes. Arigando gives us more on the story.
Finance Minister Mthuli Ncube recently introduced fresh incentives to attract companies to list on the US dollar denominated exchange that still has only one counter, a seed company called Seedco. Observers say the hype surrounding the Bowser's launch has waned as firms have all but steered clear, with fund managers worry after the abrupt closure of the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange in June last year. Amid accusations of exchange rate manipulation, the Victoria Falls Stock Exchange was set up as a subsidiary of the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange in a bid to attract badly needed foreign currency. The new measures aimed at shoring up support for listing on the struggling bows include allowing companies with exports above their monthly average to retain 80% of what they earn, up from 60%. Central bank assurances that it would allow repatriation of foreign currency from the bows have still left investors slow to participate. Economic analysts say the effect of the suspension of the likes of business giant Old Mutual from the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange is deeper than authorities have managed to grasp. Gift Mgano is among those who feel the finance minister may be putting lipstick on a frog with new measures without addressing the issue of battered investor confidence.
The implication that a radical approach where a country which is in dire need of capital, overnight we just suspend stock exchange and you shut out portfolio investments. Then you come tomorrow and say we are now establishing a new capital market in Victoria Falls and we guarantee safety of investments, respect property rights, but your actions are not speaking like that. This is the challenge which we are facing in Zimbabwe. So you would see that continue to have one counter on that stock exchange for a long time without much participation.
Mugana and others view the slow uptake of the Victoria Falls Stock Exchange as a wake-up call for the government. Kipson Gundani, another economic analyst, agrees and sees the effects of COVID-19 on investor activity.
Well, I suppose the issue of the Victoria Falls Stock Exchange cannot be wholly divorced from what is happening in the general economy. For instance, the country risk factors and all associated fundamentals that have been negating investments into the country. Naturally, I think there is a way to approach the process approach.
Ncube has embarked on investor roadshows targeting investors, but analysts are skeptical.
I think we need to address the fundamental challenges. We need to address the deficit overhang. We need to address the issues that have to do with the eradication of the legacy debt and also the high risk country profile that is either perceived or real, but still the same. It needs to be addressed.
Economic analysts add that radical and abrupt policy turns by government are disruptive to business operations and a bane to the economy. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.